grams, and the term diabetic hypersomnolar syndrome was floated by one of the doctors. I'd heard of diabetes, of course, but had no idea what the rest meant, except that he'd nearly died. The doctors said Miller was stable. The police said they'd find his mom. There was nothing left to do but go home. In the car, my parents were too tired to do more than snipe at one another, and they sent me to bed with the promise that we'll talk about this in the morning. But no sooner had I shut the door than they started up again, blaming each other for not knowing what was going on under their own roof. I hate them. I love Miller. I'm saying it now for the first time, writing it down in black and white, because it's absolutely true. I've never felt like this before. Like my body and all my senses are lit up, but I'm scared too. I'm sure he doesn't feel the same. Why would he? I'm the geeky, annoying girl who meddles in his business. He's always saying so. But we're friends. He's my best friend. My soulmate. If a soulmate is the person you can't live without. The person you'd do anything to keep safe and happy. That's what I knew for sure. I can't lose him again. And the more pressure you add to two people, the more crashed they became under the weight. Just look at my parents. They were best friends once too. I'm not going to mess things up by adding more to us, but I can take care of him and make sure he's safe. That's how I'll keep him forever.
4. That's when I knew I'd love her forever. The doctors left. They explained my diagnosis, and the weight of it sank into me, pressing me down. For the rest of my life, I'd have to watch what I ate and drink as if I were on Weight Watchers, constantly measuring and counting carbs and grams of sugar to keep my numbers stable. Exercise is good, they said, but I'd have to be careful about exerting myself, or I could go blind, lose a foot, or fall into a coma and die like Julia Roberts did in Mom's favorite movie. A ball and chain of rules and diets and restrictions, needles and pills that I'd have to carry across a tightrope without a net for the rest of my life. Then Violet stepped into my hospital room, dressed in a yellow t-shirt and jean shorts. Her shiny black hair is in a messy ponytail, and her dark blue eyes behind her glasses are filled with worry and care. For me. And in her hand was my guitar. My body weighed 1,000 pounds, but in that moment, a heavy burden lifted off of my soul. "You promised," I croaked. "I don't know what you're talking about," she said, trying to smile around shaky, watery words. She laid the guitar on my lap. "Do you even like guitars? I had no idea. This is a get-well present. I saw it in a window and decided you had to have it." A dam broke, and sobs shook her shoulders. I couldn't lift my arms to hold her as she buried her face against my side. "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry," she cried. "I should have done more. I want to be a doctor, for God's sake. And I didn't know. I didn't see the signs." "You saved me." Violet abruptly sat up and took off her glasses to wipe her eyes. "No, I called 911, but it wouldn't have gotten that far if I'd done something sooner." I shook my head against the pillow. My fingers reached for the guitar, feeling its smooth wood and the weight of it on my lap. Dad gave it to me when I was 10 years old, in the good times. The first time I held it, I'd felt as if some part of me that I hadn't even known was missing had been restored. Violet had been right. Pawning the guitar had been like tearing off a limb and handing it over to the sweaty guy behind the counter. I didn't think I'd ever hold it again. And now it was back. Now I could play for her all the songs I'd been writing in her room, with her sitting not a foot from me, oblivious to how perfect she was. But I'm never going to be so ignorant again, Violet said, putting her glasses back on and sitting straight. Type 1 diabetes means insulin shots and monitoring your glucose and keeping track of your diet. I'm going to study up on it. I'll learn how to do the shots and the finger pricks and how to read the monitors and make sure that you stay level. And I'm going to make sure you do it too, that you take care of yourself so that you don't ever... Hiccuping sobs took over and the tears came again. Vi, don't.
I was so scared, Miller, she whispered.
I'm sorry.
It's not your fault.
Guilt that she had to see me like that ripped through me, even as hope bloomed in my chest. Her tears, her anguish, they can only mean one thing. She loves me too. Then a nurse came to do a finger stick and showed me how to gather the drop of blood into a reader that measures the sugar levels. Vi watched closely, mentally taking notes.
Can I see it?
Vi asked when the nurse was done.
I'm going to be a doctor someday.
Throw it in the bin when you're finished. The nurse gave her the finger stick and left the room. Violet waited until she was gone and then punctured her own finger.
What are you doing?
She took my hand, pressed the ruby red drop of blood on her fingertip to mine.
Promise me, she said. Promise me we'll always be friends. I can't lose you again.
Not ever. Always be friends. I wanted to laugh and tell her how impossible that is, how I crossed a boundary the night we met, how all the broken pieces of my life come together when I'm with her, even for a little while, how we'd been hanging out for months, and every minute I tried to find the courage to tell her that this poor, homeless kid with nothing to offer would die for her. I swallowed hard, swallowed down what I want to say, because I'm 13, and I'm not supposed to love a girl like this. So soon. So completely. I promise.
Part 2. 4 years later. Chapter 1. Miller. I promise. The bus hit a pothole, jostling my forehead off the window and jarring me from my thoughts, from the memory of that morning in the hospital that was the best and the worst, because the day I knew I loved Violet was also the day I let her go. Stupid fucking promise. I glanced around at the mostly empty seats. It was dark, and no one seemed to have heard me, or cared if they did. My guitar case sat on my lap, and I gripped it tighter, nerves lit up. We now lived at opposite ends of the school district. Turns out, my hospitalization and diagnosis 4 years ago had an upside. A charity program worked with the hospital for kids like me and their families to help get us on our feet so that I wouldn't die in the back of the station wagon trying to inject my insulin. They moved us out of the car and into low-income housing in a shady neighborhood on the rocky cliffs overlooking Lighthouse Beach. I took the bus to see Violet instead of hiking through the dark woods at night, but I still saw her as much as I could, as much as she had time for, which felt like less and less with every passing year. She's slipping away because you're a jackass with no backbone. After Violet brought my guitar back, she asked me to play for her every night that I snuck into her room. I'd never played in front of anyone before. She was my first. Sitting in her room at night, we'd study or talk, and then she'd ask me to sing. So I did. Instead of telling her how I felt, I sang and played, and she never knew, never suspected. She thought she was too nerdy for a guy to actually like her, and I was too chicken shit to tell her how wrong she was. I hid behind other people's songs, too, like Yellow by Coldplay
That was her favorite. It became our song. She thought I'd chosen it because it sounds good on an acoustic guitar. She never suspected that every lyric was a dedication to her. And she always cried, saying over and over again how talented I was, gifted, destined for greatness. I didn't believe her, but I knew I wanted to make music for the rest of my life. Violet showed me the way, and I loved her for it. I loved her in a thousand ways, but she cherished our friendship above all else, and so I gritted my teeth and respected that. I let her feed herself lies about how terrible love was and how it ruined everything. I let her listen to her parents argue and think that's what happened to everyone. And I promised to be her friend, sealed it in blood. To plunge the knife deeper, she still carried a torch for that bastard River Whitmore. I suspected she kept her crush going because it was safe. Violet carried her shit close to her heart, too, just in a different way from me. But I couldn't do it anymore. Tomorrow was the first day of school. I was about to face down another year, our senior year of high school, with Violet never knowing how I felt. I had to tell her before it was too late, convince her to set aside her fear and see how right we were together, how fucking perfect, how we just fit. Violet must have been waiting for me, since the window flew open the second I came around the side of her house. "Get in here, quick!" She waved me up, a white rectangular envelope flapping in her hands. Her parents didn't care if I came in the front door or not. But every night I visited her, I climbed up the trellis like Romeo does in the play. Except in this version, Juliet friend-zoned Romeo. Hard. I pushed my guitar case through the window first, and Vi carefully set it aside while I crawled in and hopped down from the desk like I always did. Also, like usual, I took a breath to drink her in. Violet McNamara had been a self-proclaimed geek when I first met her, but over the last 4 years, she'd morphed from a warm, fuzzy caterpillar into a butterfly. Deep blue eyes, shiny black hair, and a body kept fit with soccer, but rounded everywhere that mattered to guys. To me, she'd already been perfect. I loved how she used to run her tongue over her braces when she was thinking hard, or how she'd polish her glasses on the front of her shirt like a college professor, serious and smart. So fucking smart. 2 years ago, she got her braces off. Shortly after that, she'd gotten whacked in the face playing soccer. I guessed her new contact lenses were a shitty prescription, since she still couldn't see how beautiful she was. Or maybe she did, though she'd never say so. But her confidence grew with her looks. She stopped hanging around with just Shiloh and me all the time, and started hanging around study group friends, girls on her soccer team. She joined debate in the math and science club. Everyone loved her, including the popular kids. Kids like River fucking Whitmore. I coughed and diverted my attention to the envelope in her hand. "You got it?"
"I did,"
she said, then narrowed her eyes at me.
"How are your numbers?"
"I, what? They're fine."
"When did you last eat?"
I rolled my eyes, but her concern made me feel warm all over. "After work, before I got on the bus." Violet's large, impossibly dark blue eyes narrowed, studying me the same way I imagined she'd size up her future patients.
"Can I?"
I smirked as she grabbed my wrist to look at the numbers on the smartwatch that was connected to my continuous glucose monitor. The small CGM device was attached to my stomach with a sensor embedded with a needle under my skin. It continuously monitored my glucose levels and sent the numbers to my watch. If they got too high or low, the watch made an alarm, a gift courtesy of the state of California, since we were too poor to afford it on our own. "Okay," Violet said slowly, releasing my arm. The numbers are okay, but if you need a snack or something, tell me. Quit wasting time and tell me. Are you in or not? I haven't opened it. Waiting for you. She started to tear open the envelope that had UCSC Medical Center's logo embossed on the front, then stopped. What if they don't want me? How could they not want you? How could anyone? The Patients Care Volunteer Program is super competitive, she began, but I waved her off. Your GPA is a 4.1 million, and you aced the interview. Not to mention you were born for this. So open the envelope already and get your assignment. Right. Okay. Violet opened the envelope. The smile that broke over her face was going straight into my next song. Holy shit, she breathed, and covered her mouth with her hand. Her eyes scanned the first page. I'm in. I'm in. She threw her arms around my neck. Her excitement hummed through her body, and I held her as tightly as I dared. I inhaled her scent, flowery and clean, and let my hand briefly touch the silk of her hair. Her breasts pressed against my chest and had to fight to keep my hands from sliding down the slim contours of her sides, down to her wide hips and rounded ass. She wasn't just beautiful, she was luscious, as my 17-year-old body liked to remind me of frequently. I pulled away from her before my dick took it upon itself to broadcast to Violet those exact thoughts. I wanted her, badly, but she needed to know how much I loved her first. She clutched the paper with both hands. I can't believe it. The PCV is like the program I need for my transcripts. The icing on the cake for my med school prospects. I smirked. You've mentioned that once or twice. Smartass. She gave me a friendly punch on the arm, then flipped to the second page. Let's see who I'm assigned to. I hope it's you. I leaned my ass against her desk, casual, not letting it show on my face how much I hoped it was me too. I didn't want a patient care volunteer unless it was Violet, but my endocrinologist recommended it for me. Managing my diabetes was difficult, more difficult than most. If the universe were being benevolent, it would be my name and address that Violet read. She'd come to my place twice a week, helping me manage my glucose, insulin, needle care and replacement, and making sure my fridge was stocked with food that my meal plan required. Violet did most of that stuff already, whether I asked her to or not. But if she were officially assigned to me, she'd have to leave her endless studying and her new popular friends 2 afternoons a week. I'd have her all to myself. But not only was the universe distinctly unbenevolent, it was downright cruel. Oh my God, Violet breathed, sinking onto her bed. She looked up at me with those dark blue eyes that were now lit up with fear. Well, who is it? Maybe I shouldn't tell you. Patient privacy. Come on, Vi, it's me. You know I'm not going to say a word. Violet bit her lip. Swear to me you won't tell, because it's serious. More serious than I expected. I swear. She lowered her voice. I've been assigned to Nancy Whitmore, River's mom. River fucking Whitmore, of course. I cleared my throat. She's sick? Violet nodded. It doesn't give details here, but just the other day, Dad took his car to the Whitmore auto body shop. When he came back, he and my mom were talking in low voices. I heard the word cancer more than once. Her hand dropped to her side. Jesus, poor River. That's probably why he hasn't been hanging out with us this summer. Us was relative, but I let it slide. I never hung out with Vi and her popular friends, but I had been selfishly celebrating that Violet's summer had been relatively river-free, and it was because his mom was sick. The universe is a straight-up asshole. I felt like one, too. She looked at me fearfully.
God, what if it's bad?
What do they expect you to do? I asked, the urge to protect her rising in me. Not heavy-duty shit. No. Simple things like changing bedding, bringing her food, reading to her, making her comfortable. I scowled. Sounds like end-of-life stuff to me.
It does, doesn't it?
Are you up for that? Violet nodded and sat straighter, her trademark stubborn, determined look painted over her features.
I can do it. I want to help. And if I'm going to be a doctor, this is part of it, right? The good and the bad?
I guess so. Making sure a 17-year-old diabetic ate his vegetables wasn't in the same ballpark as taking care of a dying woman. Violet waved her hand.
But it might not be as serious as we think. She could be in treatment and recovering. We shouldn't jump to the worst-case scenario.
I said nothing. In my experience, the only way to prepare for anything was to assume the worst. That night, I should have taken my own advice. Just be careful, I said. If it's too much, tell them. Violet smiled.
I will.
You won't. If River's mom was terminal, Violet would stick with her to the end, no matter how much of a mental toll it took. And the bitch of it all was that she'd be in River's house twice a week. I hated that jealousy gnawed at my guts when the poor guy's mom might be dying. But I knew what would happen. Violet would Florence Nightingale her way into being more enamored with River Whitmore, and he'd fall in love with her compassion and bravery. How could he not? It's what I did. Violet caught my dark expression.
I'm sorry I wasn't assigned to you, but I'm glad you'll have someone helping. Don't give your PCV a hard time, okay?
Who, me?
I'm serious. I worry about you.
Don't. Violet rolled her eyes. Like that's possible. She tilted her head and stood up, took a step closer. I could smell her perfume and the soap she used in the shower.
You look a little pale right now, actually. Are you feeling low? Do you need a snack?
I don't need a snack, I practically shouted, making her flinch. The song I'd come to sing for her felt stupid and incredibly selfish after the severity of her assignment. And how could I tell her what I felt while her thoughts were entirely filled with River? My hands clenched the side of the desk until my knuckles ached. Anger at the Whitmores for ruining my plan, simultaneously battled with feeling like shit for the tragedy unfolding in their lives. So I did the mature thing and took it out on Violet.
Miller?
I'm fine, I bit out. I'm always the same. You're the one who's different. What the hell is going on with you anyway?
Me?
Violet sank back down on the bed.
What do you mean?
You've been distant. She blinked.
When?
Last week? This summer, all last year, ever since you started hanging around Evelyn Gonzalez and her friends. Is that how it's going to be this year? We're not cool enough for you anymore? Jesus, my petulant bullshit had become a runaway train I couldn't stop.
You know that's not true, Violet said. And who is we? Has Shiloh said something? I just hung out with her yesterday.
No.
And you? We're literally hanging out right now.
Her face turned down in concern.
You really think I ignored you at school last year? That's not true.
I'm not a fucking pity case, Vi. I'm just telling you what we notice. Something's different, and has been for a while.
I have new friends. That doesn't mean I don't care about my old friends.
Uh-huh. How are things with River? I gritted out. Aside from his mom maybe dying, there are no things. I've told you 100 times. He hardly says a word to me. We're not dating or anything. Yet. She crossed her arms. Jealous, are we? I swallowed hard. Here it was. Now or never. Confess or wallow in misery forever. But in the silence that stretched between us, Violet began to stare at me fearfully, scared that I might be on the verge of imploding our friendship, of breaking our blood vow. My jaw worked as I wrestled with myself, until downstairs, raised voices, one low, one higher pitched, rose up from the floor like a seismic eruption. As always, it shook Violet's foundation, eroded her happiness. She tore her gaze from me and stared at the floor, then flinched as the sound of breaking glass from below. Footsteps thundered up the stairs. We both froze as her parents' voices grew louder.
No, you are not going to do this, Lynn, her dad shouted. Do not do this to her.
Don't tell me what I can and can't do, her mom spat.
This concerns all of us.
I instinctively moved in front of Violet as the door flew open and her parents crowded the doorway, her mom stopping short at seeing me. She smoothed a flyaway lock of dark hair from her mad dash down the hall and stood straight. Vi's dad was a boxy guy who'd played football in college. He looked it, a former linebacker in a rumpled dress shirt unbuttoned at the collar. They both looked worn out.
What are you doing here this late?
Lynn McNamara demanded.
Lynn!
Vince rolled his eyes and fixed me with a tired smile.
Hey, Miller.
I lifted my chin. Hey. Lynn pinned Violet with a hard look.
It's nearly 11. You have school tomorrow.
I know, Mom.
And honestly, Miller, our front door works, you know. I don't even want to think about the damage to my trellis.
You haven't planted anything on it in years, Violet said.
Of course not, Lynn replied.
Why would I if it's just going to get trampled every night?
She swiveled to me.
Is it every night, young man? Just what are you doing in my daughter's bedroom?
Violet flushed pink.
Mom, I've told you 1,000,000 times, Miller is just a friend, my best friend.
She looked to me, pleading.
Isn't that right?
My heart cracked, and I felt my head nod, my throat thick.
Yeah, that's right.
Her eyes were soft with gratitude, then hardened as she turned to her parents.
And what are you doing here anyway? You can't just barge in like this.
Sorry, sweetheart, Vince said, frowning at his wife. You're absolutely right.
Lynn scoffed, but was calmer now.
We'll talk about it in the morning.
Her gaze shot to me.
We'll talk about everything in the morning.
She stormed out, and Vince followed, offering a weary smile.
Not too late, Vi. Good night, Miller.
The door shut, and Vi sagged against me. I put my arms around her. Held her close.
I'm sorry,
she whispered against my chest.
God, it's so humiliating.
It's okay, Vi.
It used to not be like this. We used to sit at the table and laugh, talk. They loved each other so much. Mom told me once she was lucky she married her best friend. We were so happy.
I inhaled. I had to try, gently.
Not every couple ends up like them. I wouldn't let it happen to us, ever.
She hugged me tighter and lifted her tear-streaked face.
Tell me the truth, Miller. Are we okay?
Her brave tone couldn't mask the fear in her eyes. The agonizing bottom line was that she needed me to be her friend. In the last few years, her family had been on shaky ground, forcing Violet to grab on to any steady thing she could. Like our friendship, even if it tears my heart to shreds. I swallowed hard, swallowed down everything I'd come to say and sing to her. I even managed a weak-ass smile for her. Yeah, of course we're okay. I told you, it's no big deal. I shouldered my backpack. I gotta go. Violet didn't protest, and that was almost worse. Her own smile widened tentatively, hopefully. She wiped the tears from her eyes.
See you at school tomorrow. First day of senior year. I think it'll be our best yet.
Yep, I said, taking up my guitar case and moving toward the window. See you, Vi.
Miller?
Yeah.
Thank you.
God, she was so beautiful in her pajama shorts and t-shirt, her eyes shining and full of gratitude. Athletic from soccer, but rounded with curves, intelligence in her eyes, and a smile that could tear down a guy's defenses in a heartbeat and leave him naked and raw and wanting. I smiled with knives in my chest. Always. The bus ride back to my neighborhood felt darker. The bus was emptier, and the streets outside the window were black and deserted. My guitar case sat on my lap, full and heavy. 1,000 unheard notes bursting to get out. She doesn't love you like that. Get over it. I mustered every broken piece of my pride, sealed up the cracks in my heart. Lesson learned. Loving someone wasn't enough to keep them. Didn't work for my dad or with Violet. I didn't know why I kept expecting anything else. Chapter 2. Miller. I got off the bus a few blocks from home, near the cliffs overlooking the ocean, and nearly tripped coming down the steps. The ground tilted beneath me, and my hands trembled as I clutched my guitar case. The bus hissed and rumbled off into the night, just as my watch sounded the alarm. I peered down at the number, 69, and sinking. Shit. I sat down hard on the curb and fished around in my backpack for the glucose gummies my doctor had prescribed. Orange juice worked faster, but I wasn't going to make it the 2 blocks to my apartment for that, and I'd stupidly forgotten to bring a bottle. I chewed 3 gummies and waited for my watch to give me a better number. A few minutes later, it registered a 74, and my limbs felt stronger and less watery. I hauled myself up and trudged along the darkened streets. Shitty apartment complexes, much like the shitty apartment complex Mom and I lived in, rose up around me. Peeling paint, concrete stairs, and rusted metal railings. They all had names like Oceanfront, Beachside, and The Coves, as if they were luxury condos with the ocean for a backyard, instead of run-down housing where the nearest beach was a rocky, unforgiving shoreline. It was after 11 when I climbed up an exterior set of cement steps to 2C at the Lighthouse Apartments. Our new home, after my escapade with Violet's garden hose. It was a small 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom, with a heater that worked only when it felt like it, and a shower that had shitty water pressure. Roaches scuttled in and out of cabinets and across countertops when the light came on. But it had a shower, a toilet, a sink. It had rooms. It had a stove and even a tiny little patio off the shoebox living area. I had a bed, and so did Mom. She cried when we moved in. I wanted to cry too, but reminded myself of the truth. Nothing good lasted, and everything could be taken away at any second. Or it could turn to shit at the drop of a hat. I turned the key into our place and found my mother sitting on the couch when she wasn't due to be home from her second job at the diner until midnight. Instead of her yellow uniform shirt, she was in sweats and her dark hair was tied up in a loose ponytail. Her house uniform. I suspected she hadn't gone to work at all. The yellow light of our shabby floor lamp cast a warm, homey glow over the beer bottles, overflowing ashtrays, and fast food wrappers on the coffee table. A middle-aged guy I'd never seen before sat next to her. Warily, I shut the door, set my guitar case down.
"Hey," I said flatly. "I don't believe we've met."
"Jesus, Miller,"
Mom said with a tired laugh. She was only 41. She and Dad had me young, but she looked a decade older and was always tired.
"This is Chet Hyland. Chet, this is my son, Miller."
Chet stared me down from across the living room, a meaty hand holding a beer, resting on the belly of his mostly white wife beater. I'd stopped thinking of the tank as a wife beater, but it fit Chet. Unshaven, dark hair unwashed, and jeans stained with grease or dirt, he watched me with beady eyes. He set off every internal alarm I had. The hair on the back of my neck stood up. Then a friendly smile burst over his face.
"Good to meet you, Miller. Beer?"
"No, thanks." My hands were shaking again, and my watch was showing a 70, still too low. I went to the kitchen, my skin breaking out in a cold sweat.
"You're home late,"
Mom called from the couch.
"I went to Vi's after work."
"Miller works at the boardwalk,"
Mom said, and I heard the flick of a lighter and an inhale off a cigarette.
"Ah, a carny, eh?"
Chet chuckled.
"He works at one of the biggest arcades down there,"
Mom said, managing a smile for me.
"Just promoted to assistant manager."
I opened the fridge, my trembling hands reaching for an orange juice. My meal plan required I keep a stockpile of certain foods and drinks at all times, and we had to do it on a threadbare budget. I wasn't as good as Vi about keeping my shit in order, but there were 5 bottles of juice this morning before work, and now there were only 3. I plucked one from the shelf and shut the door.
"What the hell?"
Mom frowned.
"What the hell what?"
I held up the juice.
"I'm short too." "I might have had a couple today,"
Chet said, his eyes never leaving mine.
"Didn't know you were keeping count."
I gave Mom a what the fuck glare.
"Miller has to count everything,"
she explained.
"He has diabetes."
"Yeah, I do. I'd have thought she might have mentioned that to you, Chet. Like, immediately, so you don't eat and drink all the shit I need to live."
"My bad, buddy. Won't happen again."
He smiled at Mom, and she smiled back. It had been a long time since I'd seen that smile. Almost happy. The kind of happy that comes from not being alone anymore, and no other reason. I swigged my juice, one hand planted on the fridge door to keep me steady.
"Feeling okay? Your CGM went off a while ago."
Mom tapped her fingers on a smartphone, an old model, several generations behind the newest, from amid the crap on the coffee table.
"I'm aware,"
I said, trying and failing to take the bite out of my words. Before I had the CGM, I needed to finger stick every 2 hours, 24 hours a day. Mom, being my mom, was supposed to set her alarm and check on me at night. 2 trips to the ER in 3 months, I learned to set my own alarm. Mom was sleeping through hers and shutting them off in a half sleep. I couldn't blame her. She worked 2 jobs to keep us afloat, and my diagnosis required more time and energy than she had to spare, since my pancreas had decided to close up shop. Out of insulin, come back never. I'd learned pretty damn quick that when it came to taking care of my diabetes, I was on my own. Except for Violet. The hospital could have sent her to me. But they didn't. And that's life. I drank half of the juice and tucked the bottle in my backpack and slung it and my guitar case over my shoulder.
"Where are you going?"
Mom called as I headed for the door.
"Out.
It's late and you have school tomorrow."
"Does he give you trouble?"
Chet asked Mom in a low, warning voice.
"No, he..."
"Hey, boy."
I froze with my hand on the doorknob. My head turned on a stiff neck to meet Chet's dark, hard gaze.
"You give your mom a hard time, son?"
His words, casually threatening, slid icily down my spine. I tilted my chin and somehow managed not to blink.
"I'm not your son."
A short silence fell where I could only hear the beat of my heart crashing against my chest. Mom waved the smoke away, as if she could dissipate the tension between us.
"Nah, he's good. He's a good kid."
Chet's eyes never moved from mine, as he said to me, and only me,
"He'd better be." "Fucking hell," I muttered, hands jammed in my pockets, as I walked down the silent, darkened streets that wound down toward the beach.
Over the last 4 years, Mom had guys come and go in various shades of loserness, but Chet felt like king loser and permanently fixed to our couch. That day was a shit day, and I wanted nothing more but to sleep. But now that Mom was having a sleepover with Chet fucking Highland, I took a walk instead. Even after Mom and I moved out of the car and to the apartment, I didn't stop roaming at night, walking to be alone, to escape. Sometimes I had the urge to walk all night and not stop. But without my meds, I'd wind up dead somewhere, and they wouldn't find me until the seagulls had picked my bones clean.
"Cheery thought," I muttered,
the wind whipping my words away. That night, I wandered the remote stretch of rocky beach fronted by high cliffs. I hunched deeper into my jacket. It was technically summer, but the Northern California coast didn't get the memo. Black waves, bearded in white foam, crashed against the rocky sand, clawing at it and then retreating over and over. To the west, the glittering colored lights of the boardwalk looked garish and wild. Even a mile away, I could hear the last roller coaster of the night rattle up the track, followed by the happy screams of the riders as it plummeted. The Ferris wheel turned silently and slowly behind it. I turned my back on the color and light and trudged deeper amid the craggy, porous rocks that were black and jagged under the meager moonlight. The high tide forced me to stay close to the boulders, and soon enough, I was climbing more than walking. To my right, the cliffs loomed. On my left, the ocean reached for me in angry grabs, spraying me with cold water with every attempt. I'd never come this far before. Only when I stumbled, scraping my palm on a rough, salt-beaten rock to catch my balance, did I surrender. The water was starting to squelch around my boots, and if this stupid foray damaged my guitar, I'd never forgive myself. I'd started to turn around and pick a path back amid the rocks and dampening sand when I heard it, distant but clear, between the roar of the waves. A creak followed by a slam, like a wooden door on a busted hinge, opening and shutting with every gust of wind. Against all good sense, I kept going, and my curiosity paid off when the boulders thinned slightly. I was able to pick a precarious path over smaller, rounded stones. The shoreline curved up, away from the water, and the waves couldn't touch me any longer. The way grew easier. The sound, creak, slam, grew louder. Finally, I came around a huge cluster of boulders. Ahead, the cliffs had slid toward the ocean, and there was no more beach. Dead end. Then I heard it again. Behind me. I turned, and there was the door. It hung on loose hinges, and every time the wind blew it open, it revealed a rectangle of pitch black. It took me a second in the dark of the night to make it out, but I realized I was staring at a square wooden shack built against a collection of high boulders. I should have left it alone and gone home, first day of school and all. But what was at home? A stranger in our small space. And school was nothing but another year of being bullied for the unforgivable crime of being poor. And thanks to my colossal failure tonight with Vi, I'd spend it watching her get closer and closer to River until I lost her forever. I fished my cell phone from the back pocket of my jeans and flipped on the flashlight function. "This is how teenagers die in horror movies," I muttered into the wind. The creaking door slammed, making me flinch. I held up the meager light and peered in, using my guitar case to prop open the door. "Hello?" Jesus, I sounded like a scared dope. But if someone, or two, or 10 someones lived here, I didn't want to be rude or murdered. The shack was empty and bigger than I thought. My light wasn't strong enough. I had to illuminate parts of it at a time. Moonlight filtered in through cracks in the roof and through the one glassless window cut into the side, drifts of sand piled against it. I guessed the shack was about 200 square feet. Rickety, uneven wood planks made up the flooring. A tangle of poles still wound with fishing line, like white witch's hair, stood in one corner. A bucket, a bench, even a small table with a rusted scaling knife resting on it. I'd found a fisherman's shack, weather-beaten, salt-rusted, out of sight and forgotten and unused in months, if not years. It had its own small stretch of beach, and the ocean crashed a few hundred yards away, too far away to threaten. Mine. I sank down on the splintered but sturdy wooden bench. Suddenly, I was so fucking tired. I pillowed my head on my arm on the table, smelling wood and salt. My eyes fell shut at once. When my CGM's alarm went off, dawn's first light was filtering in the shack's lone window and streaming in from gaps in the planks like slivers of gold. I knew immediately where I was, as if I'd been coming here for years. Treasure. I found buried treasure. Just as I had 4 years ago, the night I'd stumbled out of the forest to see Violet McNamara's face peering down at me from her bedroom window. I popped a few gummies and finished off the bottle of orange juice. When I felt steadier, I stretched the cricks out of my bones for sleeping hunched over a table and grabbed my guitar case. Outside, the sun was just cresting the horizon to the east. My eyes stung with tears, probably just the cold wind, as I watched the light spill over the ocean that was no longer angry but calm, serene. In front of my shack, I found a flat rock and sat facing the water. I took my guitar from its case, looped the strap around my neck. The fingers of my right hand found their home on the frets, and the left went to the strings. The sun rose, and I played Violet's song. My voice, rough and scratchy, like old wood, sang the words that had been trapped in my heart for years. I sang them louder, strummed the guitar harder, fueled by fruitless, hopeless longing. The words rose up and up. until they were caught by the wind and torn to shreds. All I'll ever want. Pretend I'm doing fine on my own, a lost soul with nowhere to go. I got holes in my shoes walking away from you. There's living, and then there's life. Don't tell me it'll be all right. This nomad needs a home, a home. So maybe fall in love with me tonight. You're right there, but so far away. 1,000 words in my mouth, and I got nothing to say. Put you in my love song, hiding in plain sight. Don't make me say it again. Guess I'll have to play it again and make you fall in love with me tonight. Feels so good and feels so weak. This love cuts until I bleed. Don't touch me, baby. Don't look at my scars until you want to know which ones are yours. All I'll ever want, all I'll ever want is you and me. Don't know how lost you are until you're found. You can't see the road when the rain's coming down. You call me home. I'll take you to bed. Turn off the light and I'll pretend that you said, I fell in love with you tonight. Feels so good and feels so weak. This love cuts until I bleed. Don't touch me, baby. Don't look at my scars. Until you want to know which ones are yours. All I'll ever want, all I'll ever want, is you to fall in love with me tonight.
Chapter 3. Violet. The first day of senior year, I'd had plenty of first days of classes to come, years worth in undergrad and med school, but this was the last year of high school. Shiloh was fond of pointing out how ridiculously excited I got about the first day of school when everyone else was bemoaning the end of summer. Like a rite of passage, I murmured, as I dressed in skinny jeans and an off-the-shoulder waist-length sweatshirt. I studied myself in the mirror. The jeans highlighted my curves more than I was used to, but otherwise seemed plain. But in choosing my outfit for the day, Evelyn had warned me not to make it look like I was trying too hard. "You're naturally stunning, you bitch," she told me, laughing while we shopped at the King's Village shopping center the week before. "Just show off that ass of yours and no one will give a crap what else you're wearing." I turned in front of the mirror that morning in my bedroom, lips pursed. 2 years ago, Evelyn Gonzalez and her crew of popular friends hadn't paid me a second glance, but a friend from my soccer team took me to a beach party last year. Somehow, I ended up in the sandy-floored bathroom comforting a crying Evelyn, who'd just broken up with Chance Blaylock, her boyfriend of 6 months. "You're really sweet," she'd said, dabbing her eyes. "Most girls at school would be thrilled to see me like this, weak and pathetic." "You're not either," I said gently. "You're human." Something in those words must have touched the queen bee, because suddenly she was looping her arm in mine and introducing me to her friends, which included River Whitmore. I still hadn't the guts to talk to him, but whenever I hung out with him that summer, we exchanged smiles, and once he brought me a shake at the Burger Barn. True, he'd been buying everyone a shake, but it felt nice to be included. A high school experience a bookish girl like me would never have imagined. But then, River stopped hanging out with us, and now I knew why. I grabbed the envelope that held my patient care volunteer assignment from the UCSC Medical Center and tucked it into my backpack, then headed downstairs. My parents were having breakfast in the spacious, sunlit kitchen, sitting as far apart from each other as possible. Dad at the gray marble counter sipping coffee and reading the paper. Mom at the table spreading jelly on a slice of wheat toast. No fighting. No tension. Yet, I felt like I was in one of those movies where the spy has to cross a room without tripping the red lasers that crisscrossed all over. I had to move carefully, slowly, not to set them off. Morning, I said brightly. Mom didn't look up from her toast. Good morning, honey.
Morning, pumpkin,
Dad said with a tired smile. Shiloh liked to say the universe took my parents' best features and gave them to me. I got Mom's thick, almost black hair and Dad's dark blue eyes. After that, I looked nothing like them. Mom was tall, slender, with pale blue eyes, while Dad was sandy-haired and stockier.
Are you excited for your first day of senior year?
Dad asked. Definitely. I'm going to be pretty busy, what with soccer, debate, and now this. I sat next to Mom and pulled out my patient care volunteer acceptance letter and placed it on the table. You got in? Mom beamed and reached to give my arm a squeeze. I knew you would. Dad brought his coffee over and pecked me on the top of the head.
Proud of you, pumpkin.
He sat down so that I was between him and Mom.
And do you know who your assignment is?
Is it that Miller? Mom said, focusing on her toast and being careful to keep her tone casual. 4 years later, and my best friend was still that Miller to her, the boy who'd lived in a car and nearly died in her backyard. No, not Miller, I said tightly, clinging to my smile. Nancy Whitmore. Glances were exchanged between my parents. Dad shifted in his chair.
I visited the Whitmore Auto Body last week.
I know. It's cancer, isn't it?
I'm afraid so. Liver cancer. And it doesn't look good.
She's terminal, Mom cut in, her voice stiff. Let's be honest with Violet for a change. Dad's lips made a thin line, but he turned to me.
You going to be okay with that, sweetheart?
I'm going to be a doctor. Like I told Miller, the hard stuff is part of the deal. Mom set down her toast. You told Miller before you told us? When? Last night?
Lynn?
Yes, I said. Last night. Before you burst into my room like a pair of crazy people. I can't understand why he's still climbing up my trellis, Mom said, fuming. If you're not trying to hide him, Violet, then he can come through the front door like everyone else.
Lynn, we've been through this,
Dad said.
They're friends. That's how they do things. Right, Pumpkin?
Yes, I said. Not adding that the few times I'd had Miller come to the front door, Mom and Dad had either been in a rage or a cold front, humiliating for me and awkward for him. And anyway, I said, he has the same concerns you do about me working with Mrs. Whitmore, because he's a good person, the best. Mom let it drop, but the thoughts behind her eyes told me talk of that Miller wasn't over.
When do you start?
Dad asked. This week, Tuesdays and Fridays.
That's fast. Well, I'm proud of you,
Dad said.
You're going to make an excellent doctor, and this program will be the perfect finish to your college applications.
Thank you, Daddy. And on that note, Mom smoothed her napkin on her lap. Seeing as that process is going to begin soon, it might be a good idea to look into a few scholarship opportunities.
For God's sake, Lynn!
What? She's top of her class, a shoo-in for valedictorian. Why shouldn't she be rewarded for all her hard work? I glanced between them. Do I need to apply for scholarships?
No,
Dad said firmly, while Mom started to speak, then snapped her mouth shut. My stomach felt like it had suddenly turned to stone. My parents offering to pay for my entire college tuition, even through med school, had been the greatest, most precious gift of my life. Not only for the money, but because it meant that they believed in me. Is everything okay? I asked.
Everything is fine,
Dad said, glaring at Mom.
There is no need for you to apply for any scholarship. We promised we'd cover it, and we will. Isn't that right, Lynn?
Mom met his gaze steadily. If you say so, Vince.
I do say so, and I'm going to be late for work. Have a great first day, honey.
He brushed his finger over the tip of my nose and left without another word. I turned to my mom, afraid to ask and afraid of the answer. Mom? She stirred her coffee.
Don't ask me. Ask your father.
He won't tell me. You guys never tell me anything. You just shout at each other, in front of my friends now, too. Mom sipped from her mug. My hands twisted under the table. Mom, please, I want to be a surgeon.
Even with the college credits I've earned already, that's still 10 years of school, minimum. If it's too much, I get it. Things change. If there's an issue with my tuition, you can tell me. Tell me you and Dad are going to be okay. We'll talk about it later, Mom said, rising from her chair. You'll be late for school. Her fingers trailed over the envelope of my PCV assignment. You've been quite friendly with River Whitmore, haven't you? I hear you talking about him more and more, even more so than that Miller, which is why I was surprised to see him in your room last night. I thought he was out of the picture. I blinked at the abrupt change in topic. Miller will never be out of the picture, because we're best friends. I thought Shiloh was your best friend. She is. They both are. And River? You've had a crush on him for ages, and now you're hanging out with his crew. Yes, but I've made an appointment for you to see Dr. Crandall next Thursday. The gynecologist. Yes, since it's become clear to me that I can't keep track of which boys come to your room at night. Better safe than sorry. Good idea, I said, my face burning. I might lose track myself. Mom sighed. I'm just being realistic. You're 17 now, and I know how the world works. She pursed her lips. Should I have done it sooner? God, I wanted to sink into the floor. No, Mom, I haven't even been kissed. Going on birth control is overkill, don't you think? Oh, honey, she said, regret swimming in her eyes. You work so hard, and I know we haven't been around as much as we should. Not like we used to. She cupped my chin in her hand. I'm just trying to do the mom thing and take care of you, okay? I mustered a smile. Okay, thanks. She smiled back with pained amusement. You were supposed to say, no need, mother dear, I'm saving myself until marriage. Seeing as how I'll never get married, that's a little too long to wait. I hope that's not true, though God knows we haven't set the best example. I swallowed hard. You used to. You and Dad used to be so happy. She stiffened. Yes, well, things have come up. Mom? She blinked and patted my hand. I'll make that appointment. Have a great first day. Shiloh and I didn't have any classes together until history that afternoon. I met her in the expanse of grass in front of the shaded cafeteria tables at Santa Cruz Central High School at lunch. My friend wore a loose bohemian-style dress over her slender frame, and her dark hair was box-braided in hundreds of tiny braids, the ends flowing loose and wavy over the light brown skin of her shoulders. Chunky bracelets, necklaces, and rings, most of which she made herself, completed her look that I called Earth Goddess Chic. Everyone couldn't stop telling me how I'd blossomed in recent years, but Shiloh Barrera was a natural beauty largely because, like everything else, it came so naturally to her. I'd never met anyone as confident as Shiloh, comfortable in her own skin. Hey, you, I said, flopping next to her. We hugged, and I smelled sweet perfume that she made herself out of flowers from her grandma's garden. What's with you? She asked, studying me. You don't look like your usual first day of school self. Mom's putting me on birth control, and I'm beginning to suspect there's no money for my college. How was your morning? It took a lot to shock Shiloh. Now her eyes widened. Sorry, what? It's more of my parents' drama, forget it. How was Louisiana? Hot, she said. And do not go changing the subject after dropping little gems like birth control and, really? No college fund? I thought that was a done deal. So did I. Dad denies it, but Mom suggested I look into scholarships. But what if it's worse than that? What if they're broke? Your dad still has his job, right? Your mom still drives the Jag. She gave my arm a squeeze. It's probably not as bad as you think. Maybe. But God, I wish they'd just be honest with me. I'm going to apply for merit-based scholarships anyway. They're competitive as hell, but I can't sit around and do nothing. And if there is a situation they're not telling me about, I should help out. I inhaled and exhaled easier. Making plans and following a course of action always made me feel better. I'll do what I have to do. Of course you will, Shiloh said. Now, let us revisit the birth control situation. What gave your mom the idea that you needed to get on the pill, you hussy?
My parents busted into my room last night and I had Miller over. Did you two know? I said, ignoring how Shiloh looked almost disappointed. You know the deal with us. My mom's paranoid because Miller comes over all the time and because I was assigned to the Whitmores as a patient care volunteer. I lowered my voice. River's mom is sick. I heard. She brushed her hands off her lap. Okay, tell me the real deal. You and Miller. You and River. What's going on with all of you? Miller and I are just friends. Does he know that? My head whipped to her. Of course he does. Why? Has he mentioned something to you? Shiloh looked at me for a long moment, then said, No, he hasn't. I eased a small sigh of relief. Good. Shiloh rolled her eyes. Because you're afraid of messing things up and you don't believe in real love anyway. I believe in love, but yes, I'd be afraid of messing things up with Miller. He's too special to just date or whatever and then have things go south. It'd ruin us.